That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to The New Next, a podcast that addresses current events and how they will impact the future. On a completely different topic, one that I think you would find interesting. So Michael Lewis recently wrote a new book. He is famous for The Big Short, The Blind Side,
Moneyball.
Those are all the movies. But he also wrote a book called Flash Boys recently. Those actually taught me a lot about how water transfers and stuff. Yeah. Well, he wrote a book fairly recently called Going Infinite, The Rise and Fall of a New Tycoon. It's about Sam, I can never say his name right, Sam Bankman-Fried. And this was literally just published October 3rd. So I picked it up yesterday and, or 2 days ago, finished it this morning or late last night. I don't remember which one it was. It was around there. And at the beginning of the book, he says, like, so I have no history of him as a kid. Like, there's just a couple stories. Also, I'm going, a lot of my stories are going to be basically whatever Sam Bankman-Fried kind of remembers or his perspective. And I'm like, this is already the worst Michael Lewis book he's already ever written. And I haven't even gotten very far. For him. And he was, someone specifically wanted him to kind of just get to know him and stuff and write a story. And a lot of the reviews, at least the ones I've read after I read the book, cite some stuff that I find very similar. The story itself is not fresh, because it's basically just tracking the past 3 or 4 years of FTX and just hearing about, like, oh, and they made money. Oh, and they made money. This person was upset and he got mad. They made money. It's more or less a recurring theme. I felt like CoffeeZilla and just two videos about Sam Bankman-Fried, a total of maybe 40 minutes to an hour total between the two videos, told me a lot more about what happened at FTX, like the whole history and what's going on. But by the end of the book, Michael Lewis doesn't make any judgment calls at all. And in fact, he still kind of gives the option that, well, maybe Sam Bankman-Fried is just a bad, like, just a bad timing, bad luck happened all at the same time. And I found that really interesting because the way that he describes him, and he's trying to do it in a positive way, the way he describes them, describes Sam is like, well, he doesn't respond to things that most people respond to. He seems to not display feelings, and specifically happiness. He doesn't know happiness, and he gives the name of it, like there's a specific disorder or whatever that people can't experience happiness. I'm like, cool. And I'm thinking literally throughout this whole thing, at best, the dude is either is autistic somewhere on the spectrum of autism, or the dude's a freaking sociopath.
Yeah.
And I can believe both. but the guy, Sam, wants to date a female from his work. And he does everything in calculated risk. So every decision he made was a calculated risk. And at the time that he makes the decision, so he'll never commit to anything too far in the future. But he found that his calculated risk was that the most value this lady had was right before they had sex. And the least value that she had was immediately after having sex.
Yeah, dude. What a dish.
And I'm like, yeah, you're just... He's like, but he likes the sex. He just doesn't like any of the other parts of a relationship. And it was just kind of funny. Like, the more and more I hear, I'm like, dude, this guy is completely a sociopath. Like, the chemicals in his brain are not connected correctly. And the more I hear about what background they do have of him, it fits more and more. Again, at the very least, somewhere on the spectrum for autism or like full on sociopath. But none of his psychologists growing up could ever figure out anything about him. And I'm like,
maybe that's a fault with psychology.
Well, I don't think so. I think it had more to do with the parents. Yeah. Because both the parents were psychologists. In fact, they taught like psychology at Stanford.
Yeah.
And
I've been following the court case a little bit. And well, first off, I watched the CoffeeZilla video where he was going over a Michael Lewis interview, and Michael Lewis was basically saying that he didn't do anything wrong, which was crazy. You know, like it's, I don't remember what we said at the time, but it was basically like they were moving customer funds between it. And one of the things that they talked about in that was that they, he told the CFO to set up a backdoor where Alameda, which is the hedge fund, could loan up to $68 billion. Carolyn, his girlfriend, which was that the girlfriend from Carolyn Ellison from the book that you're referencing?
Mm-hmm.
Caroline Ellison.
Yeah.
She pretty much said that when they started it, the scheme occurred immediately. And there was a philosophy that since it was okay because they would do better things for the world from that, you know, be like the biggest donor for the Democratic Party was one of those things.
And that's just stuff. Yeah.
And it, like, I mean, it's naive children. And I think naive parents that are probably narcissists and psychopaths themselves. But it's I don't really know why people keep investing in people like this. It's you saw him, the dude like was everywhere, and it just kind of shows a system where if people are paying you money, like a lot of the most famous people and influencers that are former presidents, politicians, they'll support anybody, and then they'll wave up their hands and be like, oh, I didn't know, leaving. And at some point, it's just pretty unfortunate. Well,
and you mentioned a couple different things that was very frustrating to me listening to it. And this is someone that at best was taking a neutral tone, at worst was actually saying that Michael Lewis basically saying Freed was innocent or that he didn't do anything really wrong. He just kind of maybe did something wrong by accident. Like that's, but they talk about he spent over $5 billion in supporting politicians that believe the way he supported and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and the whole purpose of it was to purposely try to game the elections.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't so much of, I don't care what side of you're on. It's one thing to spend because you support the candidate and stuff, but like he was literally trying to find the algorithm of how much it costs per head to win an election.
Yeah.
And,
psychopath.
Yeah. And
well, Zuckerberg kind of did the same thing too. Just
okay.
To a lower extent. It's just kind of like it's a habit out there with a lot of these people that are perhaps ethically questionable at times and then have to grow into their adulthood.
And I mean, that can be a different conversation about the ethics of new billionaires, but I'm just thinking specifically like of him, like the way he gamed everything. And comparing him specifically to Elizabeth Holmes, because she was the last one that kind of did this fraud thing where everybody thought it was worth a lot more. I'm like, she, I mean, the MOs fit, like the same kind of issues and stuff, except that either he really is this person, like he doesn't have a change where she would put on a face and stuff, depending on whatever group of people was with, she was with, she put on a different face. And it sounded that Sam is a little bit more consistent, that he's just that guy all the time. and it's unnerving to think that you have someone that's literally lying through her teeth and people want to believe her. And then you have someone that's straight up telling you that, you know, you are not going to be the best cost infraction, like the best choice based on how my algorithm works of what's the best choice. And yet people are still like, no, take my money, take my money. And he's like, I don't care about you. Oh, but that's okay. Take my money. And if anything, it made me disrespect cryptocurrency even more after reading this book. Like, it just makes me sick. Flash Boys bothered me a lot, but this makes me even more sick of, it's not even about the actual, like, it's creating fake value into something that isn't. And you might disagree with me on that, and I'm cool with that, but we've talked about NFTs before. We've talked about crypto. We've talked about various items and products that they don't serve anything other than perceived value. Like, the product is perceived value. It's not an actual, like, goodness, my mind just flipped. Like, if you buy a pack of baseball cards, obviously there's perceived value there too, but at the very least you have a pack of baseball cards.
Yeah.
Put them in your bicycle tires or something, you know, just cause it's stupid. But you buy an NFT or you buy cryptocurrency and then that market just completely falls out. You don't have anything at all except a code, probably a really long password to get into your computer to see that, hey, what you have isn't worth anything anymore. Now, obviously, you buy something for $5 and like, ooh, I like that $5. I'll give you $10 for your $5. That's what it feels like to me. And I know we've it's been a while since we've talked about crypto and stuff, but this turns me off to crypto even more than I was before.
Well, so his mom, Barbara Fried, part of her academic work has focused on effective altruism,
mm-hmm.
which is a big point that SBF was all about, which advocates evidence and reason to figure out how to benefit others as much as possible and taking action on that basis. So I think that's where his background of over mathematizing social programs to act like an imperial wizard.
I've heard, and Lewis spends a lot of time in his book talking about effective altruism, but I don't buy it because, one, just by that adjective, it's no longer altruism.
Yeah.
Second, he was the only one that was an effective altruism in his own state of mind, according to him in Michael Lewis's book. Everybody else that was EA, they were actually more problematic because whenever something happened, their true colors showed, you know, like that. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you know, there is a perfect human being out there, but it's me. And if you were me, you would be perfect also, but obviously you can't be me. That's the feeling I kind of got from a guy who is at least positive, neutral towards him. And he's playing video games and stuff while doing all this stuff. And they said multiple times he wasn't actually listening to the people that were talking to him, that he just ignored them.
Yeah.
And that he could not recall the information later. It wasn't like one of those things where, hey, I'm talking to you, but I'm also reading an article and I'm still can recall most of the conversation. That he just played video games most of the time. And He would go on rants while playing video games sometimes, but he never listened to what anybody else had to say. That's not effective altruism.
Yeah, that's narcissism.
It's narcissism. It's at best somewhere on the spectrum, and he's just not able to comprehend correctly and stuff. And you and I have talked about this multiple times on several different issues, that in a sense, when you lose a part, like a sense, and we have more than five senses, but when you lose a sense that most people have, it allows you to focus a little bit more on what you do experience. And so like the cheater version, the comic version is Daredevil. You know, he loses his vision, so his sense of hearing and stuff becomes that much stronger, so he can basically sonar everything. I have a feeling that effective altruism was a great excuse to carry these kinds of things. Like it almost feels like the parents, we don't want to admit that our son has issues because we don't want people to look down for whatever reason. So we're just going to be like, oh no, he's great. He's a good kid. He's just a little socially awkward, or, you know, completely, whatever. But I will say this, because, you turned your head a little bit after our initial statements about Miss Teal Swan. Maybe we find out in the end that no, this guy's just really weird and is not psychotic or autistic in any way, shape, or form. He's just truly a guy that can't experience happiness. And people just want to give him money. I mean, I almost want to give him money now just because I feel bad that I said something mean about him. Here, take my money.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just...
Well, and at the end, I'm sorry, I have to add this part. And this is the insanity. This goes against the whole effective altruistic thing, especially since you said his mom wrote the book. So when he got into jail, the bail was $250 million. So they put their house up for Bell to let him out. And then they bought a German Shepherd for him. And he refuses to learn any language other than English. So he doesn't know the command to kill someone for the German Shepherd. Like, it's trained. It's basically their body protection for him. But if he ever was to decide, and he's not going to, but if he was ever to decide to break his bell and stuff, they would be completely broke, and they would have no way of, like, the house was not worth $250. Like, they would basically just be negative millions of dollars if he ever decided to break bell. Obviously he hasn't and stuff, but the idea of sacrificing your house for your, like, as a parent, yeah, I get that. I get, you know, doing what you can to keep him in a good situation, but in the idea of what's the best calculation, the right algorithm.
I'm pretty sure he gifted them $10 million and then also a beachfront mansion in the Bahamas that's worth 15 plus. I don't know if they've given that back, but that's overseas funds. But it's I'm sure they got some money somewhere, and they also basically run a political action committee now that was funded partially from us. So,
well, I mean, but so then that makes Michael Lewis even less of a person to listen to, because he said that they didn't have the money and stuff, and like there was no money in their fund, like they didn't have anything in their bank account and stuff. So it makes him a less reliable witness, which, based on some of the stuff that's going on the blind side right now, maybe that's true.
Yeah.
But it was a disappointing book. It's the first one of his that I've given 2 stars to out of 5. And
that's interesting.
And I guess the only thing I really heard about him before I saw the videos on CoffeeZilla, which I can't believe that's been almost a year ago now, was him. Like, everybody's talking about that, like, he drove a really cheap car and the way he dressed and stuff. And then I'm like, yeah, but he also had the super mansion in Bahamas that was worth several million dollars. Like, I'm not denying the fact that, yeah, cool for you for driving a car and wearing what you want to wear and having your weird hairdo and stuff. But there's also something to be said about, it's not like you were living in a $10,000 house.
So this is from the Guardian, and it's dated September 19th, 2023. It says that the lawsuit says Bankman and Fried, who are his parents, received a $10 million gift and a $16.4 million luxury home in the Bahamas where FTX was based, mm-hmm. despite knowing or blatantly or ignoring that FTX Group was insolvent or on the brink of insolvency. The couple also advocated for tens of millions of dollars of company funds to be used for political and charitable contributions, including to Stanford and to Mind the Gap, a left-wing super political action committee co-founded by his mother. And I think run by his brother, Gabe. So it doesn't necessarily stay here that they still own it, but
well, no, is their house in San Francisco that they put up. It wasn't the, I mean, they might've put that up as well, but we're still talking 250 million, not 25 million.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, if you have $26 million sitting overseas, I'm sure the Bahamas have already taken advantage of it or like taken ownership of it. But it's, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how involved they are too, with encouraging him to do what he did. So here, like from CBS News, with that, I think it was 60 Minutes that interviewed him from October 1st, 2023, Sam Bankman-Fried thinks he's innocent. Author Michael Lewis says,
yeah.
And it's just, well, I mean, if you're either fully ignorant or you're a crook. But.
Well, that's what the new CEO of FTX basically said when he took over. And he's like, yeah, Sam kept on trying to contact me and wanted to give me insight and stuff. And I'm like, no. He had three classifications of people. You're either a good person, you're naive, or you're a crook. And he's like, he's definitely not a good person. And he's like, you seem to know a whole lot of stuff for somebody that's naive about this. Like, he understood every single interaction, but he doesn't understand how the interactions led to the conclusion they did. There's, what was it? There was something else. I don't know. He worked with Mitch McConnell, according to the book, to take down Trump.
How?
I would say read the book, but basically they just had like the secret alliance of people who were trying to like do things strategically to make Trump look bad and everything.
It's so ridiculous. US politics is ridiculous these days.
Yeah. I don't know. Pretty much if somebody comes out of nowhere these days and becomes a shining star, I think the best thing to do is to be very, very critical of what they have to say or what they do.
Especially in finance.
Yeah. Finance. I'm sure he's a good guy though.
Yeah.
I heard Till Swan's single, so maybe they can hook up and she can bail him out.
Till Swan is not that crazy.
Are you sure?
I mean, the penthouse that they had is pretty sweet in the Bahamas. Wow, that's insane.
There's something else that was in the book that I thought was really funny. but I can't remember what it is. I can understand if you're working for Theranos and you came on, depending on where, when you came on to the program and stuff, that you might legitimately be trying to accomplish the mission and stuff. I don't know how you would work next to Elizabeth Holmes daily and not realize the kind of person she actually is. And I don't understand, like, his Sam Friedman, whatever, having these assistants who are with him for multiple years who knew, like, they're like, well, yeah, I mean, we know he didn't show any emotion ever. We know that he never reacted to people. We know that he didn't listen to anybody. We know all this, but we just thought he was just a little bit socially awkward. You know, I have issues with that. Oh, this is what the thing was. It was, it's not just the fact that he's claiming he's innocent. It's that the top three people all have done a plea bargain, admitted guilt. And so that's one of the things that's, how is he going to prove his innocence if, if the top three people all say that they're guilty? They're just hoping that the guilt would be like lessened and stuff. And I do say that that is something that's going to be difficult legally to overcome.
It's really hard to explain away the fact that there are backdoors and FTX's software to basically take money from customer funds and use that for Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
The tech is there. I don't know how you can fake it. So it's, that's pretty,
well, all the three people that are charged have said that they talked to him. And it's like, you need to tell them that I'm not guilty. And he's like, well, you're not guilty. He's like, yeah, but you need to tell them that. Like, oh, you know, it's, you're not guilty. You're fine. They're like, no, like you have to say something. And they're all saying like he knew about all the backdoors and stuff. Like that's the, like you can't claim, oh, I didn't know there's backdoors. Yeah. But there's three people who all say you did. Well, they're getting a reduced sentence. Yeah. They're getting a reduced sentence, but they're still going to jail.
Yeah.
Like if they were innocent and you were innocent, why would they voluntarily go to jail?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I don't know what they're thinking. I think that you need to be really, if you work in financial services or, I mean, work in crypto, stuff like that, you really need to be aware of the potential legal stuff associated with that. There's, maybe it's, Bitcoin's down to 26,000. I think that's still kind of like the best case scenario for crypto at the moment is Bitcoin. And granted, this is a platform, but what was that company? I like gave some advice to some people lately about what they should do regarding bankruptcy with one of the other platforms. If it's that old adage, if it's too good to be true, it probably is for a lot of things. If it's in terms of a publicly available off the shelf, get rich quick scheme, Bitcoin, it's hard. You know, if the economy starts to crash, since Bitcoin is totally, or all these cryptos are leveraged too, like I don't know how low it's going to go, but I expect that starting November, December, that Bitcoin's going to start retracing back down to maybe as low as that 15,000 level again. So it's just, there's a lot of momentum against it. And I really think that, I don't know if it's going to be Bitcoin, but especially as we go forward, I think decentralization is a theme going forward globally for so many reasons and so many different markets. And then in just design of equipment, tools, stuff like the military. Also, their crypto is going to play a role, but I think it's going to be more about exchanging value, like a traditional currency would be, than what we've had in recent years, which is this get-rich-quick sort of scheme for a lot of people. So it's, I mean, it's, I clearly see the need for this stuff, but how it went out, a lot of our political leaders too are just kind of like washing their hands on this stuff. But like you called out Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that really jump on board, and it goes to show you how, when it comes down to it, how little power a lot of these people really have. They're kind of trying to jump to the next thing to stay relevant. And it's just a very interesting view of people's psychology and why it makes people do what they do.
If you would like to learn more about the New Next podcast, find us at thenewnextpodcast.com, where you can suggest a topic you would like for us to cover. If you enjoyed what you heard, share the podcast, tell a friend about it, or rate us with 5 stars.